Good afternoon. As Ali said, we met a couple of weeks ago on a march. A march for the peace of Palestine. Won't be the first march that we've participated in, and I'm sure it won't be the last if the situation carries on as it is. But for Ali, and for a lot of the participants there, they were surprised. How come the Jews oppose the Zionist occupation of the Holy Land? We had their big banners. Jews are against Zionism. Zionism is against Judaism. They are two separate issues. And obviously the time there didn't permit to explain in full. It was a large gathering. But afterwards we did manage to explain a certain amount of what our opposition to Zionism is, and a bit of the history of Zionism and Judaism. Jews are descended from Abraham, who is your forefather, your great-grandfather, from two separate sons. Jews throughout history have lived in a lot of countries. Of more recent, in the last 1,000 years, since they, 2,000 years ago, more, they had, until then they had a temple. When the temple was destroyed in the Holy Land, we were commanded to go into exile and to live all over the world. And we did so. We have had oppressions, we've had problems, we've had good times and bad times. We had Jews in Arab countries, in Morocco, and in Iran, and in Iraq, big communities, Tunisia, all over, Afghanistan. And we've had Jews in Poland, and in Russia, and in Hungary, and Germany. And although there's never been a complete quiet time for the Jews, but the Jews in the Arab countries were better off than those in the European countries. European countries, there were oppressions more regular and more often. But basically, what do the Jews want? The Jews wanted just one thing, to be able to live in peace with their neighbors, to be able to socialize, hello, bye-bye, friendly, keep to their religion, respect the other person respect them, they do business together, they work together. This was fine. But the Jewish people, the ideal of the Jewish people is the religion, the Torah. The Torah is the Old Testament with its teachings. And the whole idea of a Jew is to keep to the religion, to stick to the religion. You say we had various degrees of Jews. We had plain Jews and we had higher Jews, but only on who is a high authority in Judaism. We had no aspiration to be nationalists, to be politicians, or to get involved in the local. Nobody wanted to take over. The Moroccan Jews didn't want to take over Morocco, or the Polish Jews didn't want to take over Poland. They just wanted to be able to live in peace and harmony. There were, as I'm sure you must have had in your religion as well, dropouts, people that leave the religion. They don't want to be tied to laws, to morals. They want a free life. And how do they do that? Usually they had to abandon their religion completely, more so in the Christian countries where they became Christians, or said they became Christians. But these people played no longer a part in Jewish life. They married. They become completely English or French or whatever they were, and that was it. As far as the Jewish community was concerned, they cut off all ties. There was never a time where non-Orthodox, non-practicing Jews were important to the Jewish people. In the late 1800s, when Napoleon came on the scene, he started off a new field. This field was equality for everybody, emancipation. The emancipation caused equal rights, But at the same time, people with old beliefs started, some of them, to drop it. And there was one assimilated Jew who converted towards the end of his life, called Herzl, Theodor Herzl. He didn't know about Judaism. He was born Jewish, but he didn't know about Judaism. But he decided that there is a Jewish problem. And what is this Jewish problem? That we don't have a country and a land. Judaism doesn't have to be, as far as he was concerned, religious. We've got a country, and we've got an army, and we've got a land. We'll be the same as everybody else. We won't have any anti-Semitism anymore. And he founded the idea of Zionism, which is basically a political movement for the furtherance of people born to be Jews. The sympathizers that he had with that were all assimilated Jews. No religious Jew wanted to know anything about it. They all said these people are nothing to do with Judaism, the same as I said in the speech at the rally. Communism was founded by people like Marx, who was born Jewish. But it's not a Jewish concept, communism. It's not a Jewish thing. Zionism was also founded by people who were born Jewish, but it doesn't make it a Jewish thing. So this idea developed bit by bit. In the countries where the Jews were primitive or kept themselves to themselves, the assimilated Jews, these nationalistic Jews, got connections in the government, got connections and sympathy, till they started to become successful. They started becoming the representatives of Jews. If Jews in Germany had a problem, they would go to the Zionist authorities and speak to them. And however many rabbis and however many millions of Jews got up and said, it's nothing to do with us, they wouldn't listen. Because they could relate to an assimilated man, whereas somebody dressed like me was different. They don't feel the same. This had a very, very tragic and unfortunate result. The result was, as I say, that as soon as it was founded, Zionism, it was condemned. Jews came out and said, this is atheistic, this is idol worship, this is nothing, we mustn't have anything to do with it. Jews were living in Palestine, in the Holy Land, the same as they were living in Morocco. There was no problem. They got on with their neighbors, friends. This one that way, this one this way. They were friends. They were social. Everything. Comes along Zionism and says, no, this, we want this country. Why did they want that country? They didn't really need that country. Herzl was thinking even of taking Uganda, as long as it was a country. But the advisors that he had explained to him that you've got to put some Jewish theme into this Zionism of yours, otherwise no Jew's going to even think about it. So they took the name Zion. Zion is a holy name. The original name of Zion. It means holiness. And it means in Jewish religion a part, not just the town itself, but it means the temple, the actual ideal of holiness. And they took this. They called themselves Zionists. But people protested, but it wouldn't help. Then they started pressurizing the British government, who were at the time in power. They want a homeland for the Jews. The Jews weren't asking for a homeland. They were asking for a homeland. They asked for a homeland. And eventually we had the terrible day where the Balfour Declaration was announced. From the day when the Balfour Declaration was announced, the relationships between the local Palestinian populace and the local Jews was a bit on and off. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. Why? Because the Zionists were out claiming that they want to take over the country. And although the Jews kept on saying, the religious Jews that were living there, we don't want anything to do with it, they were a little bit mistrusted. This one's a Jew, that one's a Jew. Must be that they're all in it together. The price that the people pay when you get into a political situation, yes doesn't mean yes, no doesn't mean no. Politics means lies, usually. There's no straight politician, or very few straight politicians. So they started negotiating. Our rabbis said that this catastrophe of Zionism will bring about a catastrophe for the world and a catastrophe for the Jews. It's well known that the European Jews suffered in the last world war, the Second World War, by an anti-Semitism that hasn't yet shown the face of the earth. And one of the rabbis said that this is, or more than one of the rabbis said, that this is the punishment for not fighting against Zionism enough. I heard it from people that were on a train with one of the great rabbis, it's been printed as well, one of the great rabbis who said on his way to the gas chamber, if anyone stays, let the world know that we are going here because we didn't oppose this enough. They did oppose it. They opposed it viciously. But it didn't help. Comes along a possibility that the Jews in Hungary, who hadn't yet been deported, there was 1 million Jews in Hungary, and the Germans were starting to lose the war. They realized they were in trouble. And they needed food, and they needed other supplies. And they did a negotiation with Jews of the free world. Lives for goods. We will spare the lives, we will stop the transports going, and you will supply us with goods. Certain money, so this negotiation started off, and as a sign of goodwill, the Germans stopped the transports for, I'm not too sure, 6 or 12 weeks. No transports from Hungary. But the people with the money, with the access, I mean, this was all going through courier behind the scenes, not official, were the Zionist authorities in Switzerland. The Zionist authorities in Switzerland refused to help out the Jews in Hungary because they said this money is more important. We need this money for political reasons. Jewish lives don't make any difference to us. We want the land. And if everybody's fighting in a Second World War and bringing up sacrifices, we also have to sacrifice. So we will sacrifice 6 million Jews and we'll have our country. They didn't sacrifice themselves. Here in England, there was a well-known rabbi who fought to try and save as many Jews as possible. And he got a motion at the time, again, there was the white paper in Palestine, for the simple reason that the local, our rabbis had been to the Mufti and discussed it, but there was a motion, they were worried that there's going to be Jews coming in the whole time and all part of the Zionist movement. And this rabbi, this late rabbi, Dr. Schoenfeld, approached the government, the English government, and got, I think it was 120 signatories for a motion to save the Jews from Europe, from the extermination. Put them anywhere. England, Canada, Australia. After the war, we'll sort out. If somebody feels they've got too many Jews, we'll do something, whatever it was. And there was a possibility of saving Jews and sending them to Mauritius. The only opposition to that motion was three Zionist MPs, members of parliament, who said, no, Palestine or nothing. It wasn't their lives they were playing with. It was other people's. Afterwards, the Jews came out of the camps, those that survived, and suddenly they've got saviors. They don't know where to go. And there's whole ships of Zionist groups bringing them over to Palestine. Safe land. They didn't know it was safe. But they had nowhere to go. So they were taken. The only reason why they were needed was for cannon fodder. They needed people to fight because they had in mind that they're going to get the British out, get the Arabs out, they're going to take over. And I know of more than one instance where people were taken off, gone through a war 6 years, came, arrived in Palestine, and on the day that they arrived, they're sent off to the front and killed on the front. They don't even know why. Till the time when the state was created, the Zionist state, with, again, atrocities against the, whether it's Deir Yassin or other Arab country, other Arab villages, where there were men and women and children murdered or terrorized. They got their state. After they got their state, they have to fill this state. So how do you fill a state? How do you get somebody living in England, whether in comfort or semi-comfort, or somebody living in America, or somebody living in Iraq or Iran or Morocco, got a business, got a family, lived there for generations, to leave everything and go away to Palestine, to the new Zionist state? So they realized the only way to do this is through terrorist activities. They went to Iraq and they started bombing the synagogues. They didn't bomb the synagogues saying, we are Zionists bombing the synagogues. They made it look like the Arabs are bombing the synagogues to get the Jews out. And then the Jews suddenly said, we want out. And they uprooted the whole of Iraq Jewry, or most of it. They left the possessions there, leave everything, let's save our lives. There's a letter, I mean, there's books printed, I have a copy, which we hope to reprint, of the chief rabbi of Iraq to the United Nations asking protection for the Jews against Zionism and against the Zionist terrorists. Yemen was a very, very primitive country. The Yemenites, we have a sentence in the Old Testament, in the Torah, that God said that He will take us on the wings of eagles to the Holy Land at the time when it's due for us to come by divine. These Yemenites had never seen an airplane in their lives. Suddenly there's a message that's gone out that the wings of eagles are here. The Messiah has come. And they all started charging along, and they put the actual text of the sentence in Hebrew, Old Hebrew, on the planes. These are the wings of eagles. And they all rushed in, because this is a salvation. They've never seen such a thing. When they got there, they were taken into camps, they were taught a different life to the life that they'd lived before, an immoral life, an irreligious life, and they protested. There are cases still going on today. This was in 1949 and 50. One of the main scandals that was known was the fact that their children, their babies, were stolen from them, because they had to be checked up for health. And all of them, or a lot of them, seem to have died suddenly. Nobody knows where the graves are. And they were sold at the time, in 1949 and 1950, for $5,000 a baby. To America, to Mexico, to all sorts of childless couples. And this, it comes to light at a time when these people are obviously not really registered as dead. And when they come to 18, they're suddenly called up to the army. They were told that they died 18 years ago. But now they're supposed to be serving in the army. And these things have been going on the whole time. Our people have been protesting. We haven't had it easy. The Muslim people basically got involved with the fight against Zionism when it started affecting them on a political basis, which is 1917 for the Palestinians, or afterwards for some of the other Arab countries. We were in this fight from 1890 roughly. The difference is the following, that the Muslim nations have, in a way, a political claim. This is our country. We've been living here. We are ruling, and we want to continue to rule. A political fight. It might be a religious fight as well, but the terms are different. So where you have a political fight, take the Palestinian Authority, the Palestinian government. I mean, I've met Mr. Arafat, the chairman, in 1978 in Tunisia. He'll give him a certain thing, let's try this, let's try that, because he's going for the rights of his people. If you can't get the lot, get half, get a quarter, let's get what we can. We can't do that. The simple reason that we can't recognize any part of that state or its representatives as being true. So we don't call it by the name they call it, we call it either Palestine or the Zionist state or the Holy Land. We won't admit to that. Our people won't take part in the votes because we don't recognize the state, we don't recognize the government. They won't take benefits because we don't want anything for your benefits, not yours to give. And basically, and they refuse to go into the army, etc. There are, over the period of time, the mentality has been false propaganda. If you sell it enough times, people start believing it. Goebbels, who was the Hitler's propaganda minister, said a lie is only a lie till people start believing it. You say it again and again and again, the message gets through. Suddenly people, oh, it's not so. This is true. When the state was founded, all Orthodox Jews were against it. But then there was a view, two views. What do? We can continue fighting against it, or perhaps if we go into the government and fight from within, we'll achieve something. There was that view with the intention of fighting them. But those people that did join, eventually they got tangled up. They want their institutions to be supported. They want their people special rights. Once you get into such a situation, you don't normally get out of it. Don't say they willingly went into it, and don't say they willingly intended to become involved. But as Ali said before, the situation today is that, I said this at the rally, the propaganda has caused, instead of Jew and Muslim living as neighbors, fine, friends, good morning, good afternoon, how are you? Not taking away your thing, you don't take away my thing. It's come to a degree of mistrust. I don't say every Muslim, but those that haven't heard of us before, look, same as Ali did. Oh, this a rabbi? Yeah. He's one of those that is trying to oppress us. On the other side, a lot of Jews go on the street. A Muslim, an Arab, oh, he's out with a knife, he wants to kill me. So there is this mistrust. And this mistrust is the biggest weapon the Zionist organization has. When that weapon is destroyed, it destroys a lot more than destroying chemical warfare, than destroying atoms, because you're destroying the whole reason of their being there. Zionism thrives only on anti-Semitism. They say that we are here to save the Jews. If no Jews need saving, if the Jews are fine where they are, don't need the Zionism. We don't need the country. We don't need anything. Want to go and live in Palestine? Fine, we'll ask the Palestinian Authority, they'll give this man a visa, Rabbi so-and-so wants a visa to be able to go and settle in Jerusalem, the same as somebody would want a visa to settle in England. They'll come over, they'll try it out, and if they're allowed, fine, no problem. We have had demonstrations. The first murder of a Jew that took place in Palestine since 1917 was that of a Professor Deham. Professor Deham was a well-known man who was opposed to Zionism. And when he knew that they were trying to work for a state, he was planning to make a trip to England or America to put a stop to this. And he was capable of putting a stop to this. He received death threats, plenty. And he went to Rabbi Sonnenfeld, who was the rabbi of Jerusalem at the time. He said, yes, I've also received death threats. So this one is true. One night he went out, the night before he was supposed to leave, and As he was on the way home from prayers, he was shot. This was about 1920s. Later they found out who it was. The police looked one way, they were bribed, the British police, to look this way, and the people ran away the other way. The second president of the Zionist states, I won't say his wife, but his common-law wife, let's call her, was one of those that shot him. There were two. Nobody was ever convicted. There were cases later, state after the state, where there was a protest. People protest, people are allowed to protest against their whatever they feel. They were out to get the leader of Natura Carta. They mistook his identity for somebody else, and they killed somebody. They killed him. Mass demonstrations. A few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I mean, this has been going on the whole time. 3 weeks ago, there was somebody else who was passing by a shop, an irreligious shop, where they're showing pornographic photos, and he said to a child, "Don't go in." And because of the shop owner came out, a Zionist, hit this rabbi over the head with a metal bar, killed him. And the police have it on video, but he was never charged because they have got no proofs. I have some books. We're going to reprint them. One book, actually, called Perfidy, was written actually by a Zionist, but he was anti the government with all its policies, and he tells the truth of what went on in the Second World War. How the Zionists collaborated with the Nazis, and how they became part of one scheme to make Europe free of Jews with a national cause. I have some copies that I'll leave over. Perhaps somebody would like to make copies from them, whatever. And other things that, pictures that I'll show, that you can go around the... This is a meeting of some of our people in Orient House. Orient House is the Palestinian embassy in Jerusalem. And I don't know if you want to pass it around. For this meeting, one of our rabbis was just put in prison for 6 months. It was because he attended that meeting. There are... I have here, I'll give you this as well. You can see some pictures, well known as a pogrom in Jerusalem. Where you see our people bloodied with being led away. I mean, this fellow looks like a real villain. That's what he needed, such a massive amount of police to look after him. And you see that although you haven't heard about it, we've been in this game a long time. Called the game so much. I have here a picture of the Yemenite Jew who, because he opposed his daughter being brought up immorally, he was beaten to death in a Zionist camp. Here you have a picture of them, of what they call Operation Magic Carpets, which was the wings of the eagles. But you have pictures later of the of this rabbi who opposed that. You see him here, the Jews in the Arab countries leaving. But what happened to them when they got there? They made we have a part of our prayers is to do with the destruction of the temple and all the sufferings that we went through. And there are various prayers that we say on the anniversary of this date. And the Jews of Yemen made a new prayer for that date, describing the lamentations that they went through when they left Yemen to go to the Holy Land, what the Zionist authorities did to them. I spoke with various... I spoke with Masoud, who organized the... These people dressed up, the emissaries, the Zionist organizers, dressed up as religious Jews. They didn't go around like they dress. They grew the side lobes, they put on the coats, they put on the beards, and they went around like religious Jews. They are rabbis. And basically the whole idea of Zionism is one mass forgery. It's a forgery in as much as I was asked on a radio program not that long ago whether Zionism is racism. There was this motion in Durban. I was supposed to go, I couldn't go, so I sent somebody else, one of our other colleagues. Is Zionism racism? And should it be discussed? And I said, yes. Why should it be discussed? I said, because if somebody gets up and says you mustn't discuss something, it looks like he's got something to hide. If he's not scared of discussion, if he's open discussion, then that means that there's fairness. And they asked me, in what way is it racism? Isn't the Jewish religion racism? I said, no. They asked me to explain. I said the following. Every person has a right to his religious belief. I can believe my religion is the top. They say we are the chosen people. Fine. You say your religion is different. Yours is the top. Fine. Nobody disturbs that. As long as we agree to disagree. Oh, we live by, you want to say you are the top? Fine. I want to say I'm the top. Doesn't make any difference. If I go around killing you because I say I'm in charge, that is racism. The Nazis had a policy of an Aryan, a pure race, pure Norwegian, Sweden, European, but you couldn't join that pure race. You were either born that or not. If you weren't, you were second class, third class, subhuman. A religious view is different. If somebody converts to be a Muslim, he's a Muslim. Whether he's British born or French born, wherever he comes from. The religion is part of it. The same with us. Doesn't make any difference if a person is born in Africa black, whether he's born in China yellow, whatever. If he decides to join the religion, he is part of us equal. There's a big difference. Zionism basically is a political party based on the right only of somebody born Jewish, not necessarily practicing, who has a right to that country, regardless of religion. Because I can guarantee you, if all 5 million Palestinians would want to convert, go to the rabbinate and say, we want to convert, we want to become Jews, I doubt very much whether they would be given the right to return as the Zionists claim for all Jews worldwide.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.